Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. From kangaroos bred in captivity to trained tigers, exotic pets come from all walks of wildlife. And ownership of wild animals is increasingly becoming a hot debate. Exotic pet owners defend their right to care for critters from venomous snakes to angry chimps. Animal rights advocates, meanwhile, are doing what they can to stop the purchase of exotic pets and to place current ones into safe, accredited sanctuaries. However, both camps appear to share a love of wild animals. Joining us is Lauren Slater, an animal lover herself, who wrote about the exotic animal ownership debate for National Geographic. Lauren Slater, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you looked into some of the motivations for why people buy and keep exotic pets. What did you find?
I found that there were a couple of different motivations. I mean, the ones that come immediately to my mind are some people buy exotic pets as a sort of status symbol, keeping up with the Joneses type of thing. If the neighbor has, a Bengal cat, then the other person's going to go out and purchase a cougar, just to one-up them sort of thing. And while that sounds strange, that really is a motivation. I mean, there's something exotic and certainly expensive about having, say, a wild cat. But the most common motivation had to do with people falling in love with these animals when they're babies, the mammals especially, like the tigers and the cat. And then taking them home and raising them. The problem, of course, comes in these animals don't stay babies. They grow up and they reach sexual maturity, and then oftentimes problems begin.
Right. They sort of treat them as surrogate children. And eventually, I guess, these children have to be sometime declawed or defanged.
Yeah, and even then, you can declaw, defang, de-whatever your exotic or wild animal, but you can't take its genetic material out of it. And I'm thinking of Michelle Burke, who I interviewed, who had a kinkajou, which is a relatively small animal, wild animal. And the kinkajou's name was Winnie, and she was a beloved family pet. They actually bought her on Craigslist, and they dressed her up in clothes and, anthropomorphized her in all sorts of ways. And then Winnie, at some point, a couple of years down the road, went into her first heat. And she started attacking them and also attacking herself out of just sheer kind of hormonal frustration. Mm. And that was a terrifying experience for the family. This beloved, sweet kinkajou just became a raging monster. And they gave her up after that.
Well, there are some very gruesome tales of exotic animals turning on their owners. Apparently, there's a database. What can you tell us about that, and what kind of things get recorded?
Well, first of all, that database is at Born Free USA, and you can go online and look it up. But the first thing you need to know about that database is it's probably radically incomplete. Born Free USA only reports on reported incidences. It's safe to assume that the vast majority of these incidences go unreported. So obviously Born Free USA has no way of knowing how many, violent incidences actually occur with exotic animals as pets. Mm. Again, they report on the ones that make it into the news or the newspaper. And even with that severe limitation on what they can list, there's still, you go on that site and you look at the incidences and it's, someone in Arizona was gutted to death by his kangaroo, by his pet kangaroo. Someone had their hand bitten off by a bear. Three venomous snakes were found in the, waiting area of the airport. And the list goes on and on.
Wow. Well, what are the current regulations for purchasing and caring for exotic animals?
Well, I think one of the problems with the regulations is that they're not at all consistent from state to state. I live in Massachusetts, and in Massachusetts, it's 100%, it's clear, it's 100% illegal to have any kind of wild animal. as a pet. And I think it's the same for New Hampshire. But, for instance, in Ohio, there used to be no regulations on whether or not you could have wild animals. And Ohio, in fact, is full of people who have wild or exotic animals as pets.
Remind us of the story, that gruesome story in Ohio from a couple of years ago that set the regulations off.
A man named Jerry Thompson had a menagerie of wild animals on his property. And that actually is not so uncommon. These people who have wild animals as pets will sometimes actually kind of collect them. So he had a large collection of wild animals, tigers, other kinds of large cats, zebras. I mean, it was truly a menagerie. And for whatever reason, and no one really knows what his motivations were, what was going on with him, he let them all loose, you know, 20 or 30 of these wild animals that were living in enclosures on his property in Zanesville, Ohio. Zanesville is not the country, it's a suburb. He let them all loose, and then he killed himself. He shot himself. The sheriff's force had two choices. They could try to dart the animals, basically, you know, shoot them full of medicated darts that would quiet them down and somehow rescue them, or they could just shoot them and kill them. Those darts that you can shoot into animals that quiet them down take a long time to work. And meanwhile, there were people going to work in Zanesville, and the animals were running in front of cars, and there was a good chance they were going to attack, you know, an unsuspecting citizen. So the sheriff's department really felt they had no choice but to slaughter all of the animals to kill them.
So as a result, Ohio's kind of clamping down on the exotic pet ownership. What are they doing?
Well, the first thing I think they did was they made it illegal to have wild animal auctions. I think that happened immediately in the aftermath of Zanesville. And now they are requiring that all wild animal owners register their animals with a central registry and also pay something like $3 to $5 million in insurance to have these animals, which makes it pretty much impossible to have. I mean, not many people can afford to buy insurance like that.
We're speaking with Lauren Slater. She's an author of several books and also an article in the current National Geographic about exotic animal ownership and the debate going on in several places about whether or not people should be allowed to keep exotic animals. Lauren, you write in your article that it's believed that more exotic animals live in American homes than are cared for in American zoos. What is the case that wild animal owners are making for why they should be allowed to keep these animals?
Well, there's a group called REXANA, which stands for Responsible Exotic Animal Ownership. The case that they make and the case that other people who own these exotic animals would make is that, number one, the number of violent incidences that happen with these exotic animals is actually lower than the number of violent incidences that happen with domestic animals. Hmm. So if you go on Born Free USA's website and you look at their incidences of wild animal attacks on human beings, you'll find, you know, hundreds of incidences listed there. But there are more incidences of people visiting the ER for, say, dog bites. Hmm. The other argument that they make is that it's, you know, it's within their rights as, you know, a United States citizen to own these animals, and restricting them from owning them is in interfering with their, you know, personal freedom that comes with being a citizen of the United States. And a third argument would be that wild animals have been kept by humans and human civilizations for as long as civilization has been around, which is about 12 or 13,000 years, and probably even before civilizations were actually constructed, people probably kept wild animals as pets, so that there's a long history to this. You know, but again, it comes back to the baseline argument, is that it's no more or less safe or unsafe than having a dog or a cat.
How about the argument against wild animal ownership made by animal rights activists?
Well, there's a lot of arguments, but I think the first one is that there is a big difference between a domesticated and a wild animal. of all of the large land mammals that roam this earth, and there are, you know, hundreds, only 13 of them, I think, have been successfully domesticated over thousands and thousands of years. To domesticate an animal takes thousands and thousands of years of culling from the gene pool and selective breeding. So a domesticated animal has a different genome from a wild animal. And when you take a wild animal and put it into a domestic situation, its natural inclinations, its very genetic structure does not mesh with a domestic situation. In other words, it's meant to be a wild animal. It's not meant to live in captivity. It's not going to flourish in captivity, and therefore presents dangers in captivity to both the owner and to the animal. Mm. For instance, when that, you know, a couple of years ago, I'm sure some of your listeners, or maybe all of them, heard of the terrible incident with the chimpanzee in Connecticut.
Oh, right. He mauled a woman's face.
Terribly mauled a woman. Now, that chimpanzee, you know, needed to be killed. So, you know, it came to a terrible, terrible end for both the chimpanzee primate and the human primate. Both were, one was killed and one was irrevocably mauled. So, you know, these are some of the arguments against it. It's not good for humans and it's not good for animals. Wild animals are meant to live in the wild. They are not meant to live in captivity.
I'm guessing that you've seen the film Grizzly Man.
Yes, I have seen that film.
Which was not about domesticating an animal, but this whole idea that human beings can somehow commune with wild animals. You spoke to somebody who owns many species of exotic animals about that exactly. What'd she say? Leslie Ann Rush is who I'm thinking of.
Yes. She's a wonderful woman who owns 4 kangaroos and several leaping lemurs and an exotic Asian deer and a pot-bellied pig, which actually is not a wild animal, but that was thrown into the mix, and a dog named Rover. And first of all, Leslie Rush differentiates herself from other kinds of wild animal owners in that she doesn't own any predators. So I don't think that Leslie Rush would go out and buy a predator animal. But kangaroos can be dangerous. They have a claw that's, you know, I think it's actually called a kill claw, and it can, you know, gut a human without any problem. She would say that, you know, these animals are being kept in perfect conditions. They are happy. They are well cared for. They are loved. And they provide a central sort of hub for her life. Her entire life revolves around taking care of these animals. And furthermore, some of the lemurs that she has are endangered species, and she believes that by keeping these lemurs safe, she's doing her part to protect and perpetuate the endangered species of lemur that she actually has. So that would be what, if she were here, that might be something that she would say. And for sure, her animals, they were well kept. I mean, and she does, you know, spend most of her life taking care of them, so they are taken care of excellently.
Lauren Slater, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Lauren Slater is the author of several books, including most recently The $60,000 Dog, My Life with Animals. She wrote the article called Wild Obsession, which is about the debate over owning exotic animals. It's in the current issue of National Geographic. We have a link to her article and more, including some fantastic photographs of animals in captivity from the article. All of that is at wordofmouthradio.org.